I thank you for the opportunity to share some thoughts with you today about drought, and it is my hope that you will hear an idea that can help to improve the quality of life for the people of your country. The National Drought Mitigation Center was founded to help people get control of their lives by combating one key myth. This is the idea that drought is completely unforeseeable and that there is nothing we can do about it. As with many myths, this does contain a grain of truth. In fact, for many parts of the world, including where I live in the central United States, we don't know exactly when drought will happen next because it doesn't occur on a regular cycle. However, we can state with 100% confidence that it will happen again at some point, and from there we can figure out that we need to be ready for it. This is basic risk management. We buy insurance to protect our homes or our cars from catastrophic weather, and we hope that we will never need it. Planning for drought is similar, but we can be more confident that we will need it. One of the challenges in managing drought is that it is a slow onset natural disaster. It tends to come on slowly, creeping in underneath the radar screen, so you can be in the middle of a bad drought before you really realize it. And it's hard for humans to think on the time scales that we need to think about in order to manage drought. We tend to forget from one episode to the next what was going on. We created this hydrological cycle cartoon to illustrate the challenge of keeping drought in mind. So it actually starts here at about 4 o'clock with a guy who's on a fishing trip and he's happy. Everything's normal. There's plenty of water. He's waiting to get a bite on his line. And drought starts to set in. He's still whistling a song. He doesn't really notice that he is, in fact, about to run into an obstacle because the water in the lake has gotten very low. Then all of a sudden, his boat bumps a submerged tree stump, and he has a moment of dawning awareness that something is really not right. And then he begins to experience concern. He wonders what he can do, although at this stage in the drought, there's not a lot he can do. You can see the fish he was hoping to catch is, in fact, floundering without enough water for its habitat. Then he calls the emergency number, 911, to get some help. But before the rescuers really arrive and before anything changes, it begins to rain again. And he happily goes back to not thinking about drought, not worrying about drought. And what we really want to do is break this cycle of not thinking about drought here at about the 2 o'clock position. And instead of having him lie back down and go back to sleeping in his boat, let's think about what could we do differently next time to prevent this from happening. Drought is actually a normal feature of almost every climate region on the planet, including very arid regions of the climate. This graph shows you a standardized precipitation index for a location in the state of Oklahoma, which was where the Dust Bowl of the 1930s was a very famous historic event. It was kind of centered there. And you can in fact see that drought did indeed happen in the 1930s there, also again in the 1950s. And they had some years that went back and forth between wet and dry, some wet years beginning probably in the 1980s and dominantly wet through the 1990s. And more recently, they've had some dry years in the 20-teens. So this is an illustration that drought happens sometimes very severely in different places, and then maybe again, not for quite a while, but it does happen and recur, and it is a normal feature of climate. I'm showing you a nice, clean, this is what they call a 12-month standardized precipitation with yearly values for each month. There are many ways to slice and dice climate data. This is showing you a standardized precipitation index for 1 month. One of the great challenges of climatology is knowing how to find the signal in the noise. And that is a lot of what we do at the Drought Center. The climatologists and meteorologists who I work with are all very different, have very different talents and expertise, but the one thing that they all have a knack for is finding the drought signal in the noise. That is the really interesting scientific challenge related to drought monitoring. One of the key accomplishments of the organization that I work for is that we play a central role in production of the U.S. Drought Monitor Map. This literally has, over the years, put the discussion about drought in our country onto a single page. It serves to focus and unify the discussion. But in fact, we say that monitoring drought is the easy part. It's knowing what to do about it that is difficult. This is what my boss, Mark Swoboda, says frequently. He's the director of the Drought Center. We have data sort of at the bottom layer of this data, information, knowledge, wisdom pyramid. Data is the individual observations that we collect in rain gauges and stream flow monitors. It's every individual reading, every value in a cell in a spreadsheet. And it is, in fact, helpful if agencies and organizations within countries and within regions can share data with one another. And from there, we produce information, which may be a map or a time series graph, bringing some context to that data. Knowledge is knowing why it matters, and the wisdom layer, or maybe in this context it's more appropriate to call it policy, is knowing what to do about that. How can we change it so that these drought periods have less effect on people? The National Drought Mitigation Center was established at the University of Nebraska in Lincoln in 1995. In order to help decision makers around the world and across the country answer those questions. How will we know when we're in drought, and what will we do about it? The Drought Center has grown to a staff of, at any given time, we have about 20 to 25 faculty, staff, and students, with, of course, the number of students fluctuating the most. We have core expertise in climatology, meteorology, and geography, with also a substantial group of people with expertise in GIS, computer sciences, web design and development. A group of folks have social science expertise, and then we also venture into the humanities with a background in history and journalism. I joined the center in 1995 with a background in history and journalism as the PR person doing communications and outreach. I had previously worked as a newspaper and in corporate public relations. In the late 1990s, ending in 2000, I got an additional master's degree in community and regional planning because I was specifically interested in how to reverse the information flow. How do we get people at the grassroots to tell decision makers what they are experiencing instead of always doing a more top-down kind of communication? And then in more recent years, in 2019, I finished a PhD related to how we can track drought impacts, both qualitatively and quantitatively. So that's just so you get a sense of how I personally fit into the picture of the center. On the whole, we are quite an interdisciplinary staff. Our organization works with many, many partners around the world, across the United States, and within the same institution. The School of Natural Resources, where we are based, includes the State Climate Office, a regional climate center, a center that does remote sensing, and we also have the University of Nebraska has a Water for Food Institute. You may have worked with some of the people from there, who are very focused on bringing irrigation technology to sustain the production of food for the people of the world. Nationally, within the United States, we do most of our work with either NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. That's the people that track. They have the National Weather Service. That's also the parent organization of the National Integrated Drought Information System, or NIDIS, and with the U.S. Department of Agriculture. At any given time, we're also partnering with organizations like NASA. We work with them to distribute a remotely sensed product that I will show you in a moment, with the National Science Foundation, with other granting entities. Internationally, we work with many organizations, including many United Nations organizations, the World Meteorological Society, UNCCD, and many others. So let's talk some about the practical details of drought planning. I'm sure that you've heard from United Nations in an international context about the three pillars of drought planning: resting on monitoring and early warning, vulnerability and impact assessment, mitigation and response, all coming together to create a successful drought policy. Those three pillars are closely related to the 10-step drought planning process that the founder of our organization, Dr. Don Wilhite, devised in the 1980s, where there's a monitoring committee, an impact assessment committee, and a drought task force that's charged with orchestrating all of the activity and deciding what to do about drought. When I talk about drought planning, I like to put it in terms of questions because I think questions make energy move. And those key questions are, what do you want to protect from drought? How will you know that you're in a drought? What can you do ahead of time to protect yourself from drought? And what should you do during the next drought? A few key concepts related to drought planning. One is that the scale of planning matters very much. If you look at us globally, this is the classic blue marble picture of Earth as seen from a NASA spacecraft. We're mostly water. We're blue. It's a blue planet. There's plenty of water. How could that be a problem? But of course, water isn't always where you want it, when you need it, in the quantities that you want. There are physical boundaries. I'm showing a map of the United States river basins. There are physical boundaries that determine how water flows. Then if you zoom in quite a bit to a landscape scale, you can see that water is managed according to irrigation needs with the green checks representing irrigated fields. And if you zoom in even further to a single small town with perhaps one water tower, the options for managing drought are much more limited. The questions and the answers become extremely focused and extremely detailed. Another key distinction is between drought and aridity. Aridity is a persistent feature of an area, such as the Middle East, such as Saudi Arabia. Deserts are typically arid, but the amount of rainfall that they receive, that an area receives in a given year, can still fluctuate. So we always talk about drought relative to what's normal for a single location. On the left is what's called a climagraph. For a city called Dharan in Saudi Arabia. It shows that even in the wettest month of the year, which looks to be March, they get normally about 1.5 inches of precipitation. This contrasts with Hanoi, Vietnam, where in the wettest month of the year, they're getting perhaps 13 inches of precipitation. The total annual rainfall in a city in Saudi Arabia might be less than 1 month's rainfall in Vietnam. What would be a very dry year in a city in Vietnam might be a very wet year in Saudi Arabia. The trick, though, is not how much moisture you have overall, but whether or not you're living within your water budget, living within your means. You know, we talk when we're talking about the secret to feeling wealthy is to spend less money than you take in. Likewise with water. Doesn't really matter if you have a lot or a little. The trick is to use less than you need to ensure that demand remains less than supply. Then there's the question of what do you want to protect? Groundwater, habitat, drinking water for people, robust agricultural economy. These are all good considerations, all need to be taken into account. And how will you know when you're in a drought? The National Drought Mitigation Center has helped Middle Eastern and North African countries develop a composite drought index based on remotely sensed data. There's also a handbook of drought indicators and indices that we helped develop with the World Meteorological Organization that can help you select some of the different choices that are available based on what data you have and what types of calculations you're interested in doing. This is kind of a good place to shop for a drought indicator. And there's also a lot of good work already being done in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, planting regionally appropriate trees, working to develop regionally appropriate agriculture, and providing information to homeowners and other people about types of plants that are most likely to thrive. I was happy to be able to find so many good examples as I was doing some research for this talk. I thank you very much. And I look forward to being able to converse with you in person at some point.